And the action is in all things. Even with my daughter, I expose her to every culture because that's the human. I want a human. I want a good human. And I want her to understand that ignorance hurts everyone. When you say ignorant things and improperly say things about Latinx people or Asian Americans, that's rude. It's ignorant. And we should be educating ourselves on every topic, not just African Americans.
Welcome to Let's Be Real, a completely honest, entirely practical conversation about how to live our lives with freedom, purpose, and abundance. Popular author and communicator Nicole Yunus brings her 20 years of experience as a counselor, pastor, and coach to a real conversation about the tricky questions and tough decisions in life, and how to find clarity and action no matter what obstacle you may face. Have a topic to suggest or a tricky situation you need help with? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email or voice memo to Nicole@NicoleYunus.com. We might feature you on the show. And now here's your host, Nicole Yunus.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. This might be my most anticipated podcast that we've ever had because I've told you all about Amira for like 2, 3, 4 episodes in a row. And now we are here. Welcome to the show, Amira Sine. Did I say that right?
Oh, it's sane, but that's okay.
Sane. It's like insane,
but in the membrane. Yes.
But sane.
Yes. Very
You're like
sane.
Okay, good. Well, welcome to the show. We are so glad to have you. Amira is the founder of Brunch and Slay, the founder of BAS Media. She just ran a campaign called We Build, We Win. She has a podcast. You guys want to know her because she is going to be a great voice in your life. Amira, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole. I'm excited to be here and start this conversation.
Awesome. Well, can you tell everyone a little bit about you, just where you're from, what your day looks like, who's around you in your quarantine pod? We'd love to hear.
Oh, that's beautiful. I have not been asked that question. My quarantine pod. My quarantine pod consists of my husband and my daughter, who's let her tell it. She's 5 and a half, almost 6. Not till January, though. But hey, you know how that is.
You know what, though? January might as well be tomorrow for her. I'm sure she's already planning her party. Is she planning her party?
Oh, yeah. It's epic in her mind. Whatever she's doing is epic. Fireworks and all, you know. But yeah, that's my pot. And my fur baby, Harpo, who is 16. And
16 years old?
16 years old.
Cat or dog?
Dog.
A 16, that's an old dog.
He knows I can't have him go.
So, just a moment. Yeah. Oh, baby.
I've had him since my 20s. I'm in my 40s now. So it's crazy.
My goodness.
He's my baby. Yeah.
So you are in your 40s and you have a 5 and a half year old. So you lived a whole life before you had children.
Yeah. I had her when I was 36, pregnant at 35, had her at 36 and no regrets. I think for me, life mattered, you know, for that. I was a better mom. If I had had her in my 20s, there's no way I'd be a hot mess. She would have been a hot mess. And I didn't, my husband and I weren't really sold on having kids. We were married 8 years before we decided to have a kid. So for me, I think it's best. And I'm commending women who are
waiting. We were, I think it's this is a whole different podcast. We'll have to have you back for this one, but I think it's a really interesting conversation about women who have children young or on the sort of younger side. And then when you wait, have a career or life, you know, a lot of times we don't pick, it just happens that way. But I had my first at 25, but we had already been married for 5 years. I tell women all the time, I was still ambivalent about having children while I was 7 months pregnant. Like it was too late. Like it was happening, but I still just wasn't sure. I think I'm just a realist. So I knew. Yeah. But I didn't know how awesome it would be. That's the part that, so I don't know if that's been your experience or.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm definitely thankful that we did it. I got my t-shirt, right? Been there, done that. And having one makes sense for me. I definitely don't see me being a great mom to multiple children. I can honestly say that real, you know, we're being real here, right? For her, she completes our family. She is very much in a part of who she makes the package complete. Seriously, personality, everything she does is really.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think that's so much of it is an experience, right? And you've got a lot of spiritual little sisters and children like in your life. Sometimes I think we got to take stock of like all the influence that we've been given. And of course, it's in the home. But for some of us and many of the listeners on here, it's going to be beyond that too. Like there's going to be other places where your emotional like reserves are going to be used.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's so funny because I was literally talking to God about that last night and I thought, you know, I'm so glad I get to be the best me. to her, and I'm able to do the work, like read books on parenting, things that I wouldn't have time for if I had multiple children on top of the companies I'm running and life I'm living. I wouldn't be able to give my best in certain categories. Something would suffer tremendously. And I'm glad it's not me being a mother that's suffering in this stage. God knows what the future holds. But right now, I think I'm doing a pretty good job.
And I love you. And you know what? I bet you're doing an awesome, I bet you're doing more than a pretty good job. I bet you're doing an awesome job. I feel like, I don't know, so much of parenting is just being there, just like continuing to show up for it every day, you know? And we're,
You're so right. Yeah, you're so right. And then, of course, I know I kind of didn't answer the rest of your question, but my background, I'm a Texan, born and raised in Texas, lived quite a few other places. I've lived in Florida for a little bit, lived all pretty much in every major city of Texas with the exception of
Austin, saving
which
it.
Is where I want to retire. So we'll get there. Yeah. And I am a veteran. I went to the military right after high school to pay for college.
That's
where I met my love, my husband. And we... been together for 14, married for 14 years. And I run, like you mentioned, Brunch and Slay, which is my calling, right? That's my contribution to the world that I feel God placed on my heart. My background is in sales and marketing. So I have a digital marketing agency that pays me.
I love that. And and talk about, let's be real. I love like saying that. Just one of the readers wrote in and was like, hey, when you talk about work, cause we're in the series on work, can you make sure that people understand it's not just a job? Like sometimes you do a job so that you can do your life's work. Like it's a job and that makes it happen. You could be, you could show up the best you can at that job and be great at it, but your work may not pay the bills. Like you may be called to something that's not, those things don't necessarily align. That's right.
Oh, I agree, but I need them both. Mm-hmm. Like that is my medicine. You know, I'm a community person. I'm a girl's girl. Mm. I long for connection. I don't do well without it. I love being around strong women. That is literally my fuel. You know, I can go without eating, but I need influences. I need to be around strong advocates of, you know, women who get it. That's been my whole life. I've always surrounded myself.
Oh man, I'm just like, yes, I'm. Yeah. I'm like, how far away are you? You wait. I can I get there? Can I drive to the next brunch and play? I don't think I can.
I know.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that's who I am.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Brunch and Slay and how that, because obviously you were in sales and marketing. You know, you had this life that was in every respect, I'm sure, seemed complete and fine the way it was. So what spurred on, what inspired Brunch and Slay?
You know, I think when I look back now, I see that it was always there. I had several businesses.
Okay.
I've had about seven or eight businesses, and most of them did not work according to what people would think would work. They all worked for me because they all got me to the next level, right? I learned something with each one. But with Brunch and Slay, I was at a point in my life, as we talked about, I was having a baby, right? So I was a sales director hopping on planes every week. I traveled 85% of the time, Monday through Thursday. I saw my husband on the weekends. We'd meet in the city or whatever. And I got laid off when I was 6 months pregnant. Which I spoke into existence.
Oh my gosh, we got so many more episodes. We're going to have just a Mira series. Okay.
Yes. I was at home and I knew I wanted to do something for myself 100%. And I was already ramping up to open a really posh nail salon and makeup bar. And I went to nail school. Most people don't know that.
This is amazing.
It's crazy. I was pregnant. Yeah, pregnant in nail school because I wanted to be able to show up if people didn't show up for work, right? That's just the kind of person I am. I'm always anticipating. Got ready to do that. Some things happened with the loan and I wasn't ready to commit to some of the things.
Okay.
And I just felt like, let's wait on this. Right. So I'm sitting at home pregnant. Like, what do I do now? I spent 2.5 years of my life making on a business plan, mapping out everything. And it didn't work. I knew I was already going to take a year off of work for my new baby. Right. And, once I got laid off, I was like, okay, I guess I'll sleep, you know? And hubby's like, he's like, why don't you put some work into that thing you talked about. You're always talking about doing something for women and creating some space.
Well, wait a second. I got it. Wait, we got to stop for a second. So you spent 2.5 years preparing. You're an entrepreneur. You've tried and failed before, but you had this like thing going. You were already committed. You're in nail tech school, all that. And then you said you had to go to sleep. Like how long did that last though? Like what, like, were you disappointed? Were you unsure? Like, and just how long did that season of like, what in the world?
I was so full of doubt, because I honestly, and I just want to be honest, we're real. So I'd had a great success in my career. You know, by the time I was in my, before I was 30, I was definitely in a position that most people don't get to until they're in their 40s, you know, and I was doing, I was killing it, right? And as far as work goes. And I had had that. So being told no didn't feel good, right? And I could have gotten a larger, like the loan I wanted was for the cushion. I could have got a bare minimum loan, but that's not, I don't like, I eliminate stress. That's because I'm a salesperson. Okay. So I like systems. And if it, I couldn't see a system that was going to work for my peace of mind with a new baby. So I had to step back. And I wasn't willing to put up my capital because I'd saved. And I just felt like I deserved the loan, right? I'd done everything I was supposed to. I had more than enough money in the bank to secure the loan.
Well, I always think, and I like for me, I'm kind of like, hey, like these are moments where the universe aligns to sometimes change our path. Like when things don't make sense, like when it makes sense that you should have gotten the loan and then you just didn't, you know, you, that's what I'm always like to my clients. You got to pay attention to that. You got to pay attention to those no's, you know, like what that means.
Well, even talking to you now, I'm having an aha moment. I'm realizing that's the work for me to do to help African-American and minority people secure loans because in all honesty, like I said, excellent credit, tons of like everything I needed. There's no reason I should have been shut down. So that lets me that there was some things going on over there. Rather than go out because I was exhausted, I was pregnant. You know, I'm 35. I'm pregnant. I'm narcoleptic. You know, making you know how to be pregnant. I'm like,
I gotta be ready.
I'm just gonna rest.
I gotta be ready for a nap at all times.
At all times. And I just I began to immediately be thankful. Like I came from a place of gratitude. I started meditating when I was pregnant because I wanted to be a better mom because my mind, I am a type A personality through and through, and I'm a Virgo. So I can't even stand me sometimes. Right. and so I thought, okay, this is an opportunity for me to really just be, and I hadn't ever just been, I've been going since I was 15 years old, just working, going to school, going to the military, going to college, all those things just to get, just to be. And I thought, take a moment, breathe, enjoy, be a good mom. And so I said, I'm going to give her, I was going to take a year off anyway. So take the year off. And I took 8 months off. I couldn't do a whole year. I was too bored. And I took 8 months off and then I went in and my, I decided, okay, I know I want to meet women. And initially I started Brunch and Slay literally as just a way to connect with women. Because like I said before, I traveled 85% of the time. And every time we moved to a new city, I could never find friends because you're never there. And when you can't show up and people keep inviting you and you're like, no, I'm in Tennessee. No, I'm here, whatever. They think you're brushing them off. And that wasn't the
case. That's right. And even though you like, that's all you want to do is be with them. But when you don't have that foundation built where you can like ask them to be on your, can you tell now you're preaching to me? Cause like you got to have those friends who they can also like be on your schedule, like in the seasons where you need them to. And if you don't have that, if you don't have that foundation or you don't have women who understand that, then it it is so hard.
Right. And so I was frustrated, probably a bit lonely from, for female companionship. All my closest girlfriends were in Dallas. I lived in Houston. And my husband's just like, just do something. So I said, okay, I rented out a restaurant and I came up with the name and meditation for Brunch and Slay. That's another,
which by the way, is basically my favorite business name I've ever heard in my life. Like all I do is think to myself, how could I name something that's like somewhere in the universe of Brunch and Slay? Cause it is like, I maybe it's our like personalities of craving connection and like loving strong women, but something about those two things together is, I mean, I love that it came from your meditation and came out of like a season. And I just want to circle back and call out something that you said about being highly successful in your 30s. I actually think for a lot of people, an early success then creates this like this arc where you start to believe your own hype and you believe like you have to level up constantly. And so I think when you get that, you know, basically kick in the butt and you, something doesn't work, how you rise from that is more important than the first success ever was.
Absolutely.
Because of what it leads to. Absolutely. So anyway, I just had to say that for our listeners before, because I love this story, but yeah. So you came up with Brunch and Slay in your meditation.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And I'm amen and over here because I agree. And I think for me, it was almost, I, my friends will tell you, I was at a point for about 3 years, maybe I'm going to say 4 years before I started Brunch and Slay, where I literally had no goals. I felt like my to-do list that I made in my, like when I was 18, it took me until I was probably 35, 30, 33 to make all those goals. And once I met him, I gave myself some time off and said, just live, travel, you know, be. And then that became boring. And I'm a goal person. I'm a goal-oriented person. So I had to create something that made me stretch.
Yeah.
And so with Brunch and Slay, got the name, anywho, ran out of restaurant, took my sales background, said, I'm going to just create some ads and surely I can sell it. It was only 50 people. So I'm like, surely I can sell 50 tickets. There's no. And not only did we sell out, but brands started reaching out immediately. And from just from a couple of Facebook ads that I maybe spent $100 on, this is like 5 years ago. So, you know, the ads have changed quite a bit, but
yeah, I was going to say you were on top of it. Yeah. You were right at the beginning.
And I thought, okay, this is more than just me having a meetup. This, I'm going to have to figure out how to monetize this. And that's
Well, who were you and who were you trying to reach that those brands immediately were interested in too? Like, who was your target or is your target audience?
She's you and me. She's sassy. She's accomplished. She's a woman who's not, we were at a point to where there weren't a lot of brunches and things. The brunches that you see now or were seeing before COVID, they weren't happening. None of this was happening. So the things that you would see were all like, help me learn how to get here. Help me learn how to do a resume. And I'm like, been there, done that. I want to be around bosses. I want to be around women who can teach me something. And I was past that. So I literally targeted women who were accomplished, who just wanted to be around other women. And they didn't want to network and hand out business cards. They wanted a good time around a bunch of good women and just be jovial and positive.
Yes, and brunch.
Brunch.
Henceforth, brunch.
Right. Brunch is a lifestyle. And that's what most people didn't get. I'm like, everybody doesn't brunch. That's a luxury, right? And champagne is a luxury. So those things, it was a champagne lifestyle. And I didn't want to be apologizing for it anymore because back to some self-guilt and self-hate in your 20s, when you do accomplish those things early and your family and friends haven't, you downplay it. You don't give it the glory that God has deserves, right? And I had been living in the shadows, just being quiet about my life. And I should have been saying thank you publicly for a long time. So it was time for me to say thank you publicly and help other women get to thank you. And
and moving to that, like a generous spirit, you have to be generous with yourself too. Like if you're going to be a person who brings that kind of love and confidence to others, they have to see that love and confidence in you. You can't be downplaying what God has done. I mean, of course, we're not trying to be egotistical and prideful, but at the same time, it's like, hey, God gives you talent and you work out the strength and like you do that together and beautiful things can come from it. So I'm having some aha moments.
Okay, I felt like we were in a, I felt like we were in a generation of shrinking violets.
Yeah.
And absolutely. It was so frustrating to me because at the time when I worked, I managed a team of about 50 people. And the women would be so, I'd like, they wouldn't ask for money. They wouldn't do what they needed. And I'm like, just be. Uh-huh. That doesn't mean you're being assertive. That doesn't mean you're being a bitch. It means that you know what you want.
That's right.
And I even had a test that I still use today before I react, before I go and be an advocate for myself in a professional environment. I say, how would a man handle this? Mm-hmm. And if what I'm thinking is aligned with that, I go for it with it because I shouldn't have to make apologies or say, I'm sorry that this, I don't want to come off as this. No, I want to. Because if a man said it, you would say, yes, sir. You wouldn't say she's too assertive, right?
Well, and it's a scarcity mindset because at the underlying all of that for a woman, I think is a deep belief that if I ask for more, if I show up more, if I use my voice, they're going to push me out. I'm going to get iced out or I'm going to let go. And if you don't believe that you have something so incredibly powerful to offer, and if that place doesn't want it, some other place will. If you don't believe that, then you're basically trapped in essentially an abusive situation. And you're the one who's creating the abuse because you're saying, I believe that I'm not worth anything. I'm not worth standing up for myself. So how anybody going to stand up for you if you're not going to stand up for yourself? But it comes out of that scarcity, like there really isn't going to be anything else for me. And I mean, for me and for you, having risen maybe to places that other women would want to be, I'm like, you've got to stay in the game. You cannot shrink away from your own influence because you're scared of that you might have to move on or change what you're doing or whatever.
Oh, I agree. And you said it. It's the fact that if they don't want it, you don't want to be there anyway. And there's a company waiting on you, or there's a place or church or whatever. There's something waiting on you.
Relationship.
Absolutely. Definitely. Or relationship. Girl. Let's start there. That's a whole nother episode.
Okay. So far we're speaking things into existence. We got so many places to go. I was like trying to take notes. I'm like, how am I going to even write these show notes? We got so many things to say. Okay. So you got the brand, you got the restaurant, you like took a risk, but not a big one. Like you said, for, I mean, for you as a businesswoman, it wasn't huge. Yeah. And you sold out right away, right? Like,
I think not right away. We sold out before the event. It might've been a couple of days before the event, mm-hmm. but it was just one of those things like, wow, if I can do this, and no one knows me in the city. Those were not my friends buying tickets. That was, yeah. I think that was the confidence I needed. My friends from Dallas were like, do you want us to buy tickets? I said, you know what? If you want to, great, but I kind of want to prove this to myself.
Sure.
And I only had five friends come down from Dallas who bought tickets, and yeah. maybe six. I'm gonna be, you know, I don't want to misspeak, but it wasn't a lot. Those yeah. were all sold to people who never even heard of me. I had no reputation in Houston because I never was there. I just kind of slept there sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. And we did it. And I said, okay, you're capable. And I think
I want to, yeah. I want to take me to that moment. Like, take me back to that moment right before you either like walked into the restaurant or when everyone got there. Like, what were you feeling and thinking?
I honestly say I was on a cloud. I was on a cloud of gratitude. I remember before, once the ticket sold out, I was done. Like, I knew it was going to be great. There was no mm-hmm. trepidation, because if they didn't show up, it was on them. It wasn't because I didn't do what I needed to do, right?
Yeah.
And I just remember seeing that room and speaking to those women and being full of such joy because they all wanted the same things.
Mm.
And I didn't feel, I was so worried about coming off as preaching
yeah.
because a lot of times, in luncheons and things that I've been invited to or attend, it's always kind of like a church banquet. And I uh-huh. don't want to have cocktails at a church banquet. I'm just saying.
So yes.
I really worked really hard to create a flow and a run of show that was organic and engaging. And I didn't want people to feel like we were just talking at them. I wanted them to commingle because yeah. that was the whole point. But I didn't want it to be, again, stuffy.
And did you have some people around you at this point, or did you do this on your own?
No, I planned the entire thing. It was all me. And I found speakers.
Well, cause I know you have a team now. Like yeah. I know you have a team around the world that are all a part of this now, but yeah. when it started, it was really just you kind of putting out, I mean, in church words, I would call it radical hospitality.
Okay.
Like, we're going to be celebratory. It's going to be a feast. It's going to be luxurious. And by the way, can I just say for a second about Champagne Dreams? God doesn't hold back on feasts. I don't know where we got off thinking we got to be scarce and like on everything, when God is the one who, like, he actually initiated the concept of like feasts. So anyway, we're not on that right now, but okay. So at that time it was you, but you felt that sense of like, this is really going to work.
Oh yeah.
Like, this is needed.
It was 100% me. I had no help for probably the first 2 years. I had a couple of interns the second year, but other than that, no, I didn't get a staff until the third year started to, you know, grow the staff. But, yeah, it was all me. All research. But again, one of my failed businesses was an event. Two of them were event planning businesses. So okay. I could do that in my sleep. It was not that.
Gosh, that's so cool how yeah. like failures come together to like come to convergence on the right success.
Yeah.
Just so cool. Yeah. So tell us about it now. Okay. So that was then. Mm-hmm. And that was, is it been 5 or 6 years?
16. So it'll be 5 next year. Yeah. In February.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and what is it now? Like, what has it become?
Oh, you know what? We're still evolving. So now we're more of a podcast than we are an event.
Okay.
I knew in the beginning I didn't want it to just be events. I'll be honest and I'll say that, because to me, each event was like planning a wedding, and it's not healthy to plan large scale weddings every month or every quarter.
No.
It was too much for one person. And I was a one woman show because I didn't have a lot of budget. And so I wanted to still connect with people outside of the events. So I started a podcast 1 year after, you know, 17 and didn't look at the numbers, didn't do anything. Just wanted another way of creating content. I'm not a blogger.
Sure.
I knew I wasn't going to commit to writing blogs every week. That just and I didn't want to be, at the time, fashion blogging was just really taking off.
Uh-huh.
And that's all you saw on Instagram. And I loved it because I love fashion, but I knew that I wasn't committed to the life that that it takes to be that pretty all the time. It just wasn't.
I know. I'm like, if only my content was makeup tutorials, life would be so much easier.
Right?
Although I would like literally, I think I would just go off the deep end if I had to like look at my face in a video for that many hours of every single day.
Oh, I agree. So I literally, you know, so we went to the podcast and we still have events as, you know, not as often, maybe a couple of years. Now with COVID, who knows when the next time we'll have one.
Sure.
But now it's really for me a platform. I say it's a main stage and we are the spotlight, right? We shine a light on women like you and women who are game changers, who are disruptors, who are really doing something unique, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think a large part of the doubt and the shrinking violet syndrome comes from not having examples. You cannot be what you can't see. And you see these mega successful people, and it's like, that's great for her, Beyonce. Go, girl. But I'm not Beyonce. But I'm like, no, Beyonce started in her parents' living room. And so we got to hear those stories and those failures, and we have to hear the up and coming and cheer for those up and coming, because confidence is what keeps us going, right? Mm-hmm. And that muscle, it's a muscle. It has to be strengthened. So Brunch and Slay literally is a stage for women. And we shine a light on them and sell their products. We talk about their workshops. We have them on the show. We feature up-and-comers and She Slays. We have an array of guests from, you know, people who are just now gotten their first, you know, line of press on up to people who have been on Forbes and everything else. And most of them are business owners. But for me, it's more about the lifestyle, because I like to focus on self, health, and wealth. Mm-hmm. Because they hand in hand, right? If your money's funny, nobody's happy. Right. So we got to get that right. And our health is so paramount, because we typically as women put everyone else first. Right. Yeah. And we have to make time to be healthy, and we have to make time for self-care as mothers and lovers and friends and employees. Yeah. And so that's what we do. We literally just put out good, positive vibes content for women who are traditionally underserved in the media. So no, it is not 100% for women who look like me. I'm African-American, but it is definitely for the women, a lot of African-American and minority women who typically do not get featured, right? And who are doing great things and we don't know about. But I don't limit it, because that's not what God put on my heart. I know that the world I live in is, I need everybody to succeed, right? And I want people to see that done well. And I want them to see someone of color embrace everybody as it should be done, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of times I think a lot of platforms do great work, but they have a hard time being inclusive of people like me. And it's rare. It's not until now, right? It's on trend. I was watching TV last night, just so happened, on Hulu, and they had a bunch of commercials from all these major hitters and everybody. And, you know, there was tons of Black people. And I thought, didn't see that 5 years ago, which is great. People are working. But at the same time, I don't want to be on trend. I want to be.
Yeah. Well, and I was wondering about that. Like, I've been feeling really sensitive about that. Just like, does it feel, from your perspective as an African-American female, do you just say, you know what, rising tide lifts all boats, like, let's do this? Or are you like, we've been here before, this is going to go away, people are going to stop caring? Like, what's your, how do you enter into just this particular season that we're in?
Depends on
history.
What day it is, I'll be honest with you. I make it a point to say, you know, for me, I'm one Black woman with a Black experience that is totally unique to me. And the life I lived has been privileged in so many ways, just from the parents I have. I didn't come from money. So when I say privilege, I mean the core values that I have and the love that I have that make this woman who you're talking to, right? But for me, I feel like in some ways it's like, take the opportunity. You know, when I say people are working, all those Black actors who never got a job, they're getting them now. Hallelujah. You know, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm a thespian. Yeah. Way back in the day, I wanted to be an actress, right? But my parents knew I would never make money. So
they were like, you could do that in your spare time.
Exactly. but I think that part is great. I love seeing people have an opportunity, and I trust that the folks who are getting an opportunity will take it and run with it, because they know this is their time to make hay because the sun is shining. Yeah. Right. But in some ways I do know it will dissipate, because it's human nature. It's not me being negative. It's just human nature. We always out of sight, out of mind. Right.
Yeah.
And unless you hire people who actively seek diversity in all categories, nothing will change.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I appreciate the ability. I think a lot of maturity is being able to hold together two kind of divergent feelings at the same time and just like be okay with them being unfinished. And, you know, sometimes I have an opportunity as a female preacher to be invited to some stages where I really know at the heart of it, they're just inviting me because I'm a woman. Like, they're not, that's what they need to do. And that's what they're trying to do. And you can, I mean, I can get real wrapped up around that and be like, hey, why don't you appreciate me for my skills? Or I can say, you know what, I'll take this opportunity, and it might change the hearts and minds of some people who are being exposed to something that they haven't experienced before. And that's what I'm here to do. Like, I don't need to control all of what that is supposed to mean. So I just appreciate that way of holding those two things together.
I agree. And I think sometimes we need trailblazers. We need those people to be invited, because you're obviously someone they can see, right? If you're visible, then they're going to get more opportunities. And that means when you leave a great response and the crowd is receptive to you, maybe they'll have one next to you next year, you know, and that's how it starts. It's not fast. And I think a lot of people think that change comes overnight. And we all know that, let's just be honest, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great word. And that this hasn't been like, civil rights was not that long ago. And then like when people, well, that's a whole, well, let's get into that in just a second. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I live in the capital of the Confederacy. So I have a lot to say. I was an Army brat too. I wasn't raised here. I'm not from the South. I've raised my children here. I've been here for a long time. And to see the systemic like injustice that is built into the fabric of a society and how that plays out has been stunning. I mean, just so eye-opening. Okay, so you started BAS Media. Is that kind of out of this same desire to help grow and build women, particularly who are entrepreneurs?
Well, you know, it's not even women focused. I think I've always, sales and marketing has always been my thing. I just love it. And after creating Brunch and Slay, brands began to reach out more, and it wasn't just for like influencer type things. They wanted me to do pop-up events. They wanted to know what type of audience I was going to have. They wanted the audience, right? They wanted Black women, Latina women, Indian women, and Asian women. We spend a lot of money, but you don't see us in the ads, right? And I would reach out to brands and like, hey, you know, here I am with these folks, and these are all educated. Everything that you're claiming your brand stands for, come on. You know, and they would come. And when they would come, I would say, okay, so they're still here. I am again. I started this pop up just to meet people. And I'm like, how do I make money? How do I monetize? And I couldn't figure it out. It took a while because it was uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And people who were even doing anything remotely similar would not talk to me. They would pretend they would, but they wouldn't. They would. I just had, you know, started to figure it out. And the more they reached out asking questions, I'm talking about DMs and all kind of folks would want to spend a time on an hours on the phone asking me how I did something.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I just need to teach them. I need to do it for them because they're not going to listen. People don't listen. You know, they're just as simple as that.
So, except for our listeners.
They listen to podcasts. They're
y'all listen to us, but everybody else doesn't listen.
Right. Podcast listeners. We're a different breed, right? So I literally said, okay. And I got my first big contract. I went ahead and got HUB certified and Minority Business certified so that I could be in the room with the people who needed influences that I had the audience. They needed that audience and they were getting government funds for it. So I said, let me figure out how to make this work. And I started BAS Media probably in 17. And I never publicized. I never talked about it. I just did it on the back end and just to support Brunch and Slay. And from there, it just kind of trickled on down. And now BAS Media is a digital agency. And I call it the Entrepreneurs Digital Agency. Even though we've worked with tons of big brands, especially now during COVID, we've pivoted big time because I want to help small businesses stay open, especially minority owned businesses, because a lot of times the resources aren't there. And I know how extremely thin budgets can be. Yeah. So we've worked really hard to craft some basic things that small businesses need that typically they don't have the funds for. And we create strategy plans for them and implement them. And we have it even where they, if they can't afford the implementation, they can just buy the strategy and we'll do a 6-month plan and tell them literally what to do every single day from a marketing standpoint. And we are seeing some like 162% growth all across the boards and really helping these folks. And it's so beautiful because like you mentioned before, my team is all over the world and they're not even dealing, some of the countries they're in, they don't even deal with Black lives, right? That's not even an issue. And for them to be so passionate about helping us and helping businesses, and it's just, I just feel like it's God's work, you know, just being every, what I realize mostly is that I'm a marketer by trade, right? That's what I do. So for me, it was a no brainer. But when you are an accountant, you know nothing about marketing and it's
that language.
So to be able to have someone you can just, you know, pay a small fee to and they support that and you don't have to worry about it and you trust it, that's peace of mind. And now you can focus on the things that make your business money.
Yeah. And I love what I love too, Amira, is that I'm hearing from you, and this would be like another podcast, but like just how to be open to a creative life. Like, you know, because as you're describing it, like people would probably be like, well, wait, but how does this work with this to work with this? Like if you're a really like linear person or you really want like that corporate safety or like security. But what I hear you is like, God's provided abundance over here. And I use that to bless this group of people that I wouldn't be able to do if I didn't have that more kind of abundant budget. And then I use it to bless these people. And that kind of openness to a life that doesn't look like a 9 to 5. Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, you know, is incredible. I think is the future, especially for anyone who's ever experienced life in the margins or has ever felt in any way like they don't have an advocate or an ally in a traditional business environment. Hey, there's a lot of ways to have a good life. That's right. Yeah.
And this goes back to the scarcity mentality. Like, mm-hmm. there's enough. You don't have to make money. It already exists. Yeah. And if you have a skill set and referrals, even right now, I have only place I've advertised BAS Media is on my podcast. And that's been uh-huh. over the last month. Other than that, it's been all referrals since yep. 2017. Mm. And that's just proof of God's promise to always provide if you trust. Mm-hmm. And if you truly surrender, and that's been my biggest lesson, is just surrender and let it be. Even in those moments, yeah. when has it not been all right? That's like the motto yeah. of my life. Even when it's thin. Love it. Even when love times it. Are like, girl, no, that's I cannot right. meet you for dinner.
if by dinner, you mean cookout.
Yes. If I can bring a brown bag to your house and a bottle that's already open from under my bar, right. then yes. <That's
right. laughs> because it's like the opposite of brunch and slay. Oh, it's yes. like dinner and cry.
Right. But you still slay it. You slay it in the patio, right. right? You just light the little chimney in the backyard and you that's still right. slay it, you know?
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's BAS Media. Okay. So let's talk about We Build, We Win for yeah. a minute, because I do want to get to some reader questions. And thank you so much. I always like, I'm just grateful that you're allowing me and anyone who maybe just has felt and maybe has lived into a system of racism without really knowing it, and then wants to try to start the conversation. Cause I think that there's some ignorance and like, people are afraid. I know I always am, of like being offensive and not knowing or not meaning to be. And so just your humility and gentleness to enter in, I really appreciate. But this whole thing started because I follow your podcast. I was listening to We Build, We Win. And I just wanted you to say a few words about that. And then I was going to ask you a couple questions, some uncomfortable questions, if sure. that's okay.
Sure. I'm here for it. And I'll preface this again by saying I am not I'm not the spokesperson for all African-Americans. Yes. However, this is my experience. And mm-hmm. the We Build, We Win challenge for me was born out of all the social unrest we're having. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had to do something because that's just my nature. And I knew I had to do something that people could digest and do it on their terms if they wanted mm-hmm. to. And I knew that it had to be some action, because hashtags are great, right? Mm-hmm. And I was really disturbed in the thick of it. And I think we're really in the thick of it now, I guess at the start of it, when Aubrey and Brianna yeah. and George and all that happened back to back, it was a lot. And I'm still not good. Okay. So mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you guys. So be patient with me. But I felt like I knew that we were just here with Trayvon Martin and Michael yeah. Brown and Sandra Bland. And I knew that mm-hmm. we had to use what we have. And I don't have a lot, right? But I have mm-hmm. a small platform of people who value my opinion to a certain yeah. extent. And I felt like I should start there.
Yeah.
And if I didn't, shame on me. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what could I do that doesn't cost anything? Mm-hmm. What can I do that makes people, if they're comfortable, not too uncomfortable, because I know people won't do what they're uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, about it long and hard. And I figured I'll reach out to my tribe and say, hey, 7 days, can you join me? Can mm-hmm. you just do one little piece of action? And I went so in depth with it where I gave them the instructions every day, like literally gave them the art, gave them the instructions and said, hey, talk to a friend, reach out. Because my theory is, if you only just reach out to the people who you can touch and correct behavior or start conversations, like you said, the uncomfortable, I don't know what to say conversations, even if it's a table full of people who look just like you and you happen to be not, you know, if you're white. It doesn't matter. The conversation starts. That lingers, right? And maybe they take that conversation to someone else. I truly believe in the domino effect. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if we all just made a point to touch 3 people who we felt comfortable with, even, then we would make a difference. And and it would keep moving, right? And so I wanted to do that. And we finished that on Sunday.
Okay.
And it was a different challenge each day, from listen to our Spotify playlist to listen to podcasts, maybe listen to some books, and actually having a discussion about them, to obviously brunching with someone and having these conversations.
Yeah. The brunching with someone is my favorite.
Yeah. You know, and I just thought, if I can meet people where they are and let them know, I'm not expecting radical change right now. I'm just expecting a commitment to change.
Yeah. And I love that there was like the initial catalyst of those just, you know, just horrific experiences, which as I'm with my African-American friends, they're like, hey, this has been going on for a long time. Like the fact that you're now aware of the conversation is part of the problem. Like that is the thing, you know, and having those conversations and then realizing everyone and their brother, and they probably were talking to you, brands, all releasing anti-racist statements. They're all committed. And then I'm like, well, what does commitment look like? Because if it doesn't look like us talking about it now, in September, which is only like a few months after it, what's it going to look like a year from now? Like, so I was inspired by that and wanted to send my listeners over to it. Even though the challenge has passed, you can go look at all of this stuff on your Instagram, Brunch and Slay. Check it out. See all those recommendations, Black-owned businesses, books to read, music to listen to, conversation starters, all of that. So that's just a different approach. I've already had David on, my friend David Bailey. We talked a lot about the church and sort of racism in the church and steps to take. But in the midst of that, we wanted to keep having these conversations. And I felt like I wanted to ask like a couple of uncomfortable questions, if you're willing, Amira.
Yes. I'm going to tell you that. I will be honest.
Okay. Well, I want you to be honest. Okay. And this is things that I have heard and that I would love to just address and bring to the table. And the first one is this, but I'm not racist. What do you say when, or if anyone would say that to you, or what do you say to a person who is white who says, but I'm not racist?
Nothing. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not my job to make you feel better. I think that's a huge part of it. I have a diverse group of friends and people. They just gravitate toward me, which I'm okay. I mean, I gravitate toward it. I'm a people person. So a lot of times people come to me with their, what do you think? And I'm like, I can't help you with that.
Yeah.
You need to get confident in whatever you're trying to deliver, but don't just come to me. And when you come to me, I know you're only coming to me, so I don't hear you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're not racist. Okay. Well, we're all biased. I think that's where it starts, right? Harvard has a tremendous study, which I'm actually giving a talk on unconscious bias tomorrow, which is crazy. We're talking about this. But
awesome. They
have a free study for unconscious bias from everything from genders to age discrimination and weight. And we're all biased. That's the first step. Everybody thinks it's just a black and white thing. Honey, it's not. We all have preconceived notions. You can be biased against somebody who looks just like you because it's a class thing. You know, we have derogatory terms that we use internally in our own subcultures about our own people. And I say people, the human race, right? In every aspect of that. But the I'm not racist, if you have to say that, you need to question yourself, because the fact that you feel like you need to say it, you are.
Okay, here's my next question. Race isn't the problem, blank is. Race isn't the problem, poverty is. Race isn't the problem, education is. Race isn't the problem. What do you say if you were to hear that?
I say they're all problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's a passive aggressive thing to say because you don't want to talk about race.
Thank you.
Okay. That's what that is, because race is a problem. Poverty is a problem. Money is a problem. Health insurance is a problem. These are all things. And the thing that happens is it disproportionately affects minority people because we don't have access and we don't have, you talked about civil rights.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I want to break down for people who want to say slavery was 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The Emancipation Proclamation ended slavery for most of America, but in Texas, it wasn't even ended until years later on Juneteenth, which is still ridiculous. Then you fast forward to where we were promised 40 acres and a mule so that we can do for ourselves, which is what people want to do. No one wants to depend on the system.
Let's be clear. Yeah.
And no one wants to fit in. We just want fair and equality. It's simple as that. Mm-hmm. So you go from there to the emancipation. Still, right? You can't get a job. You can't vote. They start putting black men in prisons and breaking up families for little bitty things like voting or getting a job or walking on the wrong side of the street to keep them from exercising the rights they needed to do. It's intimidation. You're dealing with a legion of people who have been brutalized, murdered, and lynched publicly for entertainment, for selfish reasons. And then you tell them you're free, but as soon as you act free or try to be normal, then I'm going to put you in jail. I'm going to break up your family. So guess what you did? You put us right back in slavery, mentally and physically. There was no funds to move, right? There were no funds to do those things. And everybody can't just go up north and start over. And there was still racism up north. Then you fast forward after 100 years of that, then you go to civil rights movement. That's the Civil Rights Act passed in the late 60s. It is now 2020. So technically, our rights weren't even rights until 50 years ago.
That's right.
After slavery. And then we still are being lynched. Mm-hmm. We are still being denied jobs. I'm still being denied a business loan with excellent credit mm-hmm. and money in the bank. Mm-hmm. So that is the breakdown. I don't know how else to break it down to people because it's not a 200-year thing. We're talking about 50 right. years.
I think that actually is really like if nothing else, even for any listeners who are feeling uncomfortable, disturbed, or want to argue, because I understand, like I understand that response when you're feeling like you're getting hit in the face with something that feels really different than what you have thought in the past. But the reality is if we could even change one mind to say, this is all more recent than you think it is. There was no reconciliation project. There was no forgiveness project. I'm not saying it's like perfect in South Africa, but Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela, there was an actual repentance project. Like we're going to come into honesty. And I think as a culture, we have refused to come into honesty. And so there's no growth without honesty. And like, I think the start is like, can we try to be a little bit more honest about the history as a starting point? Because that may help you understand where we are now, like that it is a big deal, that it does require, and like it requires intentionality. It's not, it's so recent.
If you're listening to this and you are suddenly feel the need to argue or feel like you mm-hmm. slapped in the face, ask yourself why.
Yeah.
That's the first step because mm-hmm. everything I said is just history.
Yeah.
That shouldn't make you angry. It shouldn't make you feel like I'm trying to come at you. None of the things I said mm-hmm. you owe me anything other than mm-hmm. respect and dignity mm-hmm. and opportunity in this level playing field because we're all humans. Mm-hmm. As simple as that. I don't mm-hmm. know how else. I don't want anything from you. I'm not trying to take anything. The table is bountiful and plentiful. There is so much to go around. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying does not take away from your quality of life. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take a job away from you because, honey, I'm probably more qualified, right? So, you know, I'm just going to say it. Like, I don't want your stuff. I want my stuff. Yeah. And I want you to leave me alone. I want you to leave my nephews alone. I want to not have to give them lectures about walking around their college campus with a hoodie on and for fear of their life. I want to sleep really well at night, right? So I want to stop crying every other week because I see someone's been murdered on the news. Those are simple human rights. Yeah, don't get be mad. Yes, be mad at society for allowing this to go on for so long. Get real mad. Get that's real mad, but don't be mad at me.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good, Amira. Thank you. Here's our last reader question. I am raising my 5-month-old grandson who is biracial. Do you have any words for me about how to incorporate his heritage and history?
Just do it.
Granny. Probably. I kind of wanted to write her back and be like, girl, you're already on the right track. Yeah. You're already asking. So,
and not even just asking, this is the thing, it's humanism, y'all. Mm-hmm. I think that's an excuse to me. An excuse, mm-hmm. you want me to, how did you raise your children? How did you raise your daughter who gave you that baby, mm-hmm. right? That's it. Like raising them to be good humans, you quit asking for permission to say something is wrong. And this is not offensive to grandma. I'm glad you asked granny. Or Nana, I'm sorry. I hope you're not a granny.
I don't know who she is. But, she's Grammy or Grammy or whoever she is.
That I'm sending this with love, Grammy. Because I think we become stagnant, I go again as women, because we're wanting permission to speak up. We're wanting permission to take action. And the action is in all things, even with my daughter, I expose her to every culture because that's the human. I want a human. I want a good human. Right. Mm-hmm. And I want her to understand that ignorance hurts everyone. When you say ignorant things and improperly say things about Latinx people or Asian Americans, that's rude. It's ignorant. And we should be educating ourselves on every topic, not just African Americans. But you should also raise that young baby to know how people are going to perceive that young baby. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something I see a lot of times with biracial children. People are afraid. They want to throw out all the time they're biracial. I'm going to tell y'all a secret. No one cares. Mm. No one really is hung up on what they're composed of. Are they a good human and what they gravitate to? But know that when most of the world sees that young man, they're going to see a black man, which that's just the world we live in. So you have to expose that young fella to people who look like him, to go get his hair cut at places where they actually specialize in black hair, to know the little idiosyncrasies, to watch movies that have African-Americans in them, to watch TV shows, to go to activities. It's important to take him to Juneteenth parades and Martin Luther King Day parades. You know why? Because that's a part of the history. It's important for you too, Grammy, because the more you're around it, the more you will call out others who think it's stupid. I think God had a, you know, I'm going to say this and people are probably going to be very pissed. But over the last 20, 30 years, interracial relationships and babies has just like catapulted, right? Mm-hmm. To a lot of people who were racist. A lot of Southern grandparents did not expect their daughters to come home with black babies. Uh-huh. And that was, I feel like that's God's way of softening your heart. If you can love that baby, you'll start to see, you'll get offended when people stare at your grandson, right?
That's right.
Or they say ignorant things to your granddaughter. But just look at it as you're a pioneer. You're a trailblazer. Right. God gifted you. He thought you could handle it. And you have to whom much is given, much is required. And you have a beautiful grandson who is relying on Nana to help him be a good human. And to acknowledge and to expose him to, even at church, if there are no black people at your church, Nana, you got to change churches.
Yeah.
Right. Because he needs to see everything, or even visit one church a month. Maybe don't change churches, but visit one Sunday a month where he can see a diverse group of people and see the spectrum, because that would be a huge catastrophe not to let him see how everybody lives.
Granny, you just got a big permission slip from Amira. She said, go do what you know you need to go do. And then she told you 20 things to do. So she said she wasn't going to tell you anything, but she got going. She got you some stuff. I hope you're taking notes. Okay. We're going to wrap up, Amira. It's so great. I want to ask you 3 go-to questions. Okay. As we wrap up, just to take it from here, thank you so much for your heart, for your energy. I know conversations like this take a certain amount of like our soul to have, and I'm grateful that you would share so generously with our listeners. Okay, so here we go. On the way out, ready? What's your go-to snack, Amira?
Oh, right now, spicy pickles, like bread and butter, kind of spicy pickles. I like.
Oh,
those.
Yeah. Those are good. You just eat those on their own, right out the jar.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. No one in my house eats pickles but me, so don't eat one in my house because my fingers have been in the jar.
They're all for you. Okay, what's your go-to like feel-good product? Let's go in the makeup realm, since I know that you love makeup like I do. You got any product that you're like, this is my jam right now?
My absolute favorite product right now is a vitamin C mask from Lovin' a Skincare. It is, it's like a balm, and it looks like the vampire facial when you put it on, and it is creamy, and I feel so full of luxury every time I put it on each week, and and it's this burgundy, bold ox blood color. It's just everything. Like everything she makes on that line, Lovin' a Skincare, LOVINAH.
Awesome.
And man, that's my favorite product right now.
I'll put in the show notes, ladies. Everyone will find that. Finally, what's your go-to source of wisdom?
Wisdom probably be my mom and my aunt as a person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I talk to God a lot. Like, let me be clear. Like, I go to him first. Mm-hmm. It's very rare now at this point that I really call my mom or my aunt for advice because I usually get it in meditation. I'm a huge meditator. So I pray. I talk to God one-on-one. We have real conversations. And yes, I do hear back.
a whole nother podcast,
right? But that's number one. God is all the wisdom. Everything you hear out of my mouth right now, stuff that I wouldn't be this bold if I wasn't so connected.
Yes, I love that. That is a great final word. Thank you, Amira. You've been Amira Sane, guys, from Brunch and Slay. You have been amazing. Thank you
for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Be Real with Nicole Eunice. We'd love to hear from you. Have a topic to suggest or a tricky situation you need help with? Send us an email or a voice memo to nicole@nicoleeunice.com and we may feature you on the show. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.